we have 5 uncontested items. By the way, if people want to address items today to the board, there are speaker cards that need to be filled out. I don't have any speaker cards for item number 8. And I wondered, I'm thinking it would, if there is no protest for this item or comment on this item, that I would like to add it to the uncontested list. If we do that, there's a change sheet that is an item number 8 as well to recognize a small, grammatical correction to order number 2017-0039. So I would propose then, seeing no speaker card or protest, to move item number 8 to consent, that we would do so. Mr. Corbett?
I was just going to move uncontested items 3 through 8.
Do we need? Second. Fantastic. Can you call the roll, please, Betty?
Board Member
Aye.
Board Member Corbett?
Aye.
Chairman Noren?
Aye.
Board Member Bedoya?
Aye.
Board Member Gant?
Aye.
Fantastic. By the way, I see uncontested items as a win. It's a sign. It's a indication of a job well done. So thank you so much for everybody that gets us there. We have item number 9. Let me just catch up here really quick. Might I suggest we take a short 10-minute break out of the effort of preservation, and we'll be back at 9:40. Place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of proposal order number R1-2017-0056, conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for emergency disposal of disaster-related waste within the North Coast Region. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those expect to give testimony in these matters please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath? Do you swear and affirm to tell the truth, Mr. Reed?
I do.
All right. Again, if anybody wants to speak on this item, please fill out a speaker card and get it to Patty.
Thank you, and good morning, Chairman Noren and members of the board. I'm Charles Reed, Senior Water Resource Control Engineer here at the Regional Board. I'm giving the staff presentation for item number 9. I won't read that long, long title again. You did an adequate job. So as we all know by now, early October there was a very large fire in our region. The figure on the right shows the various fires in the complex that made up the complex fire. Some of these fires occurred out of our region. The Atlas fire over here in Napa, and the Sulphur fire up in Lake County. The Nuns fire actually had split. Part of it was in Napa, Region 2, and some of it was in our region as well. And, of course, the Tubbs fire and the Redwood and the Pocket fire up and the Redwood Valley fire were fully within our region and required some response from us. So in total, almost 200,000 acres were burned out of all these fires. Almost 9,000 structures, and structures being houses, outbuildings, and commercial buildings. The residences, I think, were almost 7,000 residences were destroyed. So in total, so far, as of December 7th, Army Corps of Engineers has removed 358,000 tons of debris, and much of that has gone to central landfill. So I thought it was important to maybe talk a little bit about the management structure of this fire, because it's so different than what we're used to. Normally in a fire, a wildfire, like the one that occurred in Lake County a few years ago, it's the California Office of Emergency Services and Cal Recycle that would be the lead agencies in the cleanup and recovery efforts. But because of the tremendous size and destruction of this fire and the fact that other fires were happening throughout the state, and Cal Recycle was otherwise occupied, There was a request from the state to for federal assistance. And after the president issued a declaration of emergency for this fire, the fire response, the cleanup and recovery, essentially became federalized. And that's something we're kind of not used to here. And it has been quite an experience, to be honest. So what that federalizing the response effort really meant that the Federal Environmental Management Agency, FEMA, is the lead agency for that effort. They contracted with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for the debris cleanup and other technical technical assistance. The U.S. EPA is one who would deal with any sorts of disasters, hazardous waste, household hazardous waste. And the state and local agencies would be there as more of a support sort of position, and to facilitate the contractor work with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So wildfires are not unusual to California, to say the least. So the kind of debris flows that we were expecting were pretty much true to form. And these are on the slide here, you can see the kind of debris we're talking about. Household hazardous waste, which includes paints and solvents, batteries, pesticides, fuel containers. Actually, there were quite a lot of propane tanks that U.S. EPA had to deal with and dispose of. There's also other sorts of hazardous waste, normal waste that might have become contaminated and deemed hazardous and not able to be disposed of in a Class 2 or 3 landfill. That is also a small part of the debris. The large portion of the debris is ash in fire-impacted soil. There was a decision made here, I'm sure you're all aware, for the Army Corps to have their contractors take around 6 inches of soil in addition to the ash. So that greatly increased the volume of ash and soil debris that needed to be disposed of. Animal carcasses are also another debris type, not so much in this fire from what I've heard, but other fires might have, and other disasters might have mass animal mortalities that might need to be dealt with. Street sweeping waste is a waste type that had importance in this particular fire. There was obviously a lot of ash falling, and we had a rain event almost a couple of weeks after the fire, and it was determined that one of the greatest threats to water quality was ash migrating from hardscape to water. So there was an effort to deal with that waste, and it ultimately went to central landfill. Metal and concrete debris and burned trees and other organic debris are potentially recyclable wastes. Metal would be refrigerators, washers, and dryers, and all other sorts of metal things in your house that might not burn. Burnt automobiles are a considerable percentage of this type of debris and kind of difficult to manage. Concrete debris would be debris from foundations and driveways. And by and large, this type of waste can be recycled for other uses. The burned trees and organic debris, initially that debris is coming from county and city agencies who are removing fallen trees and destroyed trees that might pose a safety hazard. We expect that right now that debris volume is somewhat low, but I think that'll pick up over time as some of the other debris types get dealt with. And Cal Fire and PG&E start doing more work removing vegetation that's been killed. We also expect in the future, because of a loss of vegetation, more erosion and more potential for landslide debris and other mud flows to contribute to this debris flow. So So shortly after the fires started in October, the governor issued a proclamation declaring those counties impacted by the fire disaster areas. And what he also did was exempt from state laws and requirements and other requirements and regulations activities for cleanup and recovery. And the objective of the proclamation was to facilitate quick cleanup and recovery of the fire impacted areas, while at the same time, this is at the same time protecting water quality and the environment. So what it was recognized pretty early on is that for us to facilitate the objectives of this conditional waiver or this proclamation, we needed to have some regulatory tool in place. Many of the other regions throughout the state have had existing a disaster-related conditional waiver. We at Region 1 did not, but we saw the need to do that in really quick order. Unfortunately, as you might imagine, the situation in the office in mid-October and early November was crazy. So we were very thankful that some of the other regions in the State Board Division of Water Quality got together and prepared a draft conditional waiver for us to use and to adopt. So we accepted that that conditional waiver and requested from the Secretary of EPA, of Cal EPA, to allow us to issue this waiver quickly. And the exemption was to postpone the normal notification procedures until such time as the board can go through those public noticing procedures and adopt a conditional waiver, a more long-term conditional waiver, which is the reason why we're here today, for you to consider that long-term waiver. So one of the conditions that the Secretary of EPA did, included in his approval, was that this waiver would expire by December 31st, 2017. So this in your executive officer's summary report is referred to as a temporary waiver because it is a temporary waiver. This waiver is meant to apply to the temporary waiver is meant to apply to a fairly narrow set of fire-related disasters and subsequent environmental impacts from fires. It was also clearly focused to be used for the central landfill because we knew that the central landfill was going to be receiving in very short order debris waste. So there's specific language in there for this central landfill. And we knew also that staging was going to be a staging of waste as it moves to its final area of disposition is going to be important to cover. So this category waiver also has some, this temporary waiver also has some requirements related to staging. So I want to show you some pictures of some of the debris management efforts under this conditional waiver. We have currently three notices of intent. So there are three entities covered under this conditional waiver: the Republic Services for their operations. Thank you for their operations at the central landfill. We also have Sonoma County, who has submitted an NOI for organic matter management at the airport landfill. We also have CNS Waste Solutions in Windsor, who submitted a notice of intent for various waste streams that they're handling. This is actually a very interesting photo because it shows the number of trucks. This is Meacham Road leading up to the landfill, and to the Stony Point Quarry, which is taking some concrete debris. And this line, I think, was, if I recall correctly, was hundreds of trucks, and it was multiple hours that some of these drivers would have to wait in line in order to dump the waste at the central landfill. And this is a photo from late November of operations at the central landfill. I'm sure it's changed quite a bit since then. There's a couple notable things here. You can see the debris here from the fires. It's mostly soil and ashes mixed in. We just can't make it out. So, and we're very fortunate actually to have this new cell go online. It was scheduled to go online in early November, but there's some expediting of the approvals to get this up and operational as soon as possible to accept this waste. So this whole cell here is accepting the fire debris waste and, of course, municipal solid waste, because that's what it's designed for. So there was an effort to, there is an effort to protect this liner, blend 50% municipal solid waste with, make a 50-50 blend of municipal solid waste fire debris. And you can maybe see from this photo there's a bit of a problem here. We're getting a tremendous amount of waste, and the municipal solid waste is not really keeping up. One other thing that I think is pretty interesting in this photo is the trucks. And this, from what I understand, is a pretty solid thing that you will see during during operational time at the landfill, a solid stream of trucks coming in and out with waste. And I think if you've driven around this part of Sonoma County in the last month, you can attest to the number of trucks you see everywhere. So this is a photo of the Stony Point Rock Quarry, which is located right next to the landfill in Petaluma and Petaluma-Cotati area. They're accepting quite, I think, the lion's share of concrete debris at the moment. Creams Dismantling and Scrap is a facility not far from here, and they normally accept automobiles for crushing and for recycling, and they are stepping up and doing quite a lot of receipts of automobiles from this fire. CNS Waste Solutions, which is also nearby, they've been taking a number of waste streams. This is from early December, but they've been accepting this waste concrete for a while. I think it's important to point out that when they started doing this, accepting the waste, they did so without the benefit of the conditional waiver. But they went ahead and installed BMPs, as we would have had them do anyway. So they really stepped up and did it right. So CNS Waste Solutions is also accepting a relatively small amount of metal debris. We're told that this doesn't last long. It still has quite a lot of value, so it doesn't usually stay on site much more. Any load doesn't stay on site much more than about an hour or about a day. Then it's taken down for recycling and enrichment. They're also taking some car bodies. And those are ultimately going to be disposed of. CNS Waste Solutions has also has given some space to U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for their staging of household hazardous waste. You know, they collect the waste and they put it into these containers, and then they ship it away. Sonoma County has graciously allowed one of their closed landfills to as a location for staging for organic debris. This is an example of some unshipped organic debris. And here's another row of organic debris that's been chipped and being stored. uh, So what the board, we're asking the board to consider today is the long-term waiver, because the temporary waiver expires on December 31st of this year. This long-term waiver is meant to go for a duration of 5 years. It's the conditions of the waiver are largely similar to the previous waiver. It's a little bit more, the applicability is a little bit more expansive. So rather than, as in the temporary waiver, which was related, was applicable to fire debris and subsequent related debris flows, this one is more expanded to include all sorts of disasters, including fires, floods, storms, earthquakes, or mass mortality events that occur outside of, you know, separate from the fire. The requirements for waste disposal at municipal solid waste facilities and staging and surface impoundments are the same as in the temporary waiver. So anticipated enrollees, the Republic Services and the Central Landfill will remain, will transition from the temporary waiver to the long-term waiver and so that should be the only enrollee for landfills. That's the only landfill in our region that's accepting, that is open to accept fire waste, or any waste for that matter. But we also anticipate a number of enrollees for people who are staging waste for final disposal. We have heard we're roughly at 20 to 25% of the waste being handled so far, which leaves about 75% more of the waste. So we anticipate there'll be a real need for staging, both to guarantee a steady flow and not an overwhelming flow to the landfill, and to guarantee that there's some storage for those other waste streams. So what we've been doing probably for the last couple of weeks is trying to reach out and coordinate with the local agencies and other entities who are currently staging or staging some of these wastes, and who we think in the future might be staging these wastes, because we want to make sure that they're obtaining the coverage under the conditional waiver that they need to do to comply with the governor's proclamation. We're also advertising to the extent we can the availability of the conditional waiver and the need for people to get coverage under that. We're also in the process of updating our website to include a link to that conditional waiver and the notice of intent to make it easier for people to get coverage under this conditional waiver. So the waiver conditions, as I mentioned, are fairly similar to the last. There's a requirement to submit a notice of intent within 30 days after beginning disposing of waste or staging waste. It requires notice of termination within 10 days after the discharge has stopped, either the staging or the landfilling has stopped. There's a requirement to separate inert waste from hazardous waste for a couple of reasons. First, to preserve landfill capacity. We want to reserve landfill capacity for those waste that should be landfilled, and divert recyclable waste where we can. Also, we want to avoid putting hazardous waste in landfills. Even though these are lined landfills, they do generate leachate, and we don't want contaminants from household hazardous waste or other waste contaminating the leachate and making that unhandleable. There are special requirements in this conditional waiver for handling mass animal mortality waste. There are management practices to prevent the discharge of material to surface waters. That includes setbacks and covering of staged waste so that contaminants don't migrate. And this is a long-term waiver, maximum of five years, and this begins on January 1st, 2018. So there's a change sheet associated with this this order. We've made a couple changes, some things that we've found needed changing, and some in response to other things that we had found. One of the items in the change sheet is we are clarifying that the conditional waiver is only for emergency declared disasters. Second, we added a feature that automatically transfers coverage from the temporary waiver to the long-term waiver to save a little effort on the people who have taken it. Who have applied for the temporary waiver. We've also added a provision that allows use of this conditional waiver for disasters that occur outside the region, but allow waste to be discharged to the central landfill. That was an important thing we think we needed to add. Partially because our Sonoma County is split between Region 1 and Region 2. So if there is some sort of disaster that could be covered in this conditional waiver in the south part of Sonoma County, they could still use the central landfill as a final point of waste disposal. So with that, staff is recommending that you adopt Order number R1-2017-0056, and with the change sheet.
All right, so thank you, Charles.
And this last slide is just some contact information. Terry Tochia, who's one of my staff, is really the most knowledgeable about all this stuff, and I'll probably be asking her questions if someone comes to me. But these are our contact information. I also wanted to give a shout out to the county's website, SonomaCountyRecovers.org. It has a tremendous amount of information for all things fire-related in Sonoma County. Mendocino County also has a website for those who want to find out how the expectations of Mendocino County for fire debris management. And that concludes my presentation. Thanks, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks, Charles. For one thing, I want to recognize the efforts of getting the original waiver out that this waiver replaces. This agency was incredibly fast and diligent in doing so. I also want to recognize the County of Sonoma. County Sonoma covered waivers under some of the waste handling facilities, M&M Services, and I believe CNS was under them as well. I also want to recognize Republic Services. I want to recognize Mr. Soylent and the work for some of that. I want to recognize anybody that has worked on this process to get to here. If I do simple math here, given your 358,000 tons and 1,367 properties, that's an average of 262 tons per property. So we're not talking small quantities, and it's only partway done. Given the magnitude and intensity of what's happened here, we're going to get into this more in item number 11. But the regulatory end of this, I think, is so important. And I'd be remiss, too, to not recognize Republic Services that took over operation of that landfill and has operated, will continue to operate that landfill. As it is, I think this waiver makes great sense. And to extend it 5 years and to have it as being a working tool, not only for this, but potentially for other things. So I just wanted to say that and recognize those others as well. I really don't have any questions on it. Anybody else have questions or comments? Mr. Greg Giusti.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. thank you, Charles, for bringing this together in such a cohesive and articulate fashion. I really, really appreciate it. I guess what I wanted to put a couple of things in context, and I certainly support everything that Chairman Noren just said. But I guess for you, Charles, and your staff, I'm sure there are days that you felt you're making it up as you go along. And I want to remind you, you probably are, because we've never dealt with this before, and the enormity and the scope of what everybody is trying to deal with. So I think you need to all give yourselves a pat on the back, because the you are making it up. We all are making it up as we go along. To address the issue of organic material in trees, to use your number of 199,000 burned acres, doing simple math, at 100 trees per acre, which is woefully underestimating the density of vegetation out there, but 199,000 times 100 trees is 19 million trees. I'm not sure people yet recognize the enormity of biomass that will be dealt with across this area. By a small example, in the Valley Fire, Lake County removed 10,000 trees. I don't know how many trees Caltrans, AT&T, or PG&E took. But what they did do up there is those trees were converted to mulch and left along the roadside for folks to use as erosion control measures. So I just my question is, will this waiver allow organic mulch to be staged in areas where people could have access to what will be tons of chipped trees so that they can use it for water quality and erosion protection? Or let's put it the other way, will it prohibit that from happening? Counselor?
I would answer that. I don't want to be wrong.
Okay. I might let you go first, Charles.
No, I don't think it prohibits that. I think a staging area will need coverage under the conditional waiver, though. But that it doesn't really say where the final disposition of that waste that's being staged has to be.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, so the waiver covers the disposal of fire-related debris that's non-hazardous at facilities that currently have WDRs, or it allows for temporary impoundments on at other locations, and then there's a whole series of conditions for those facilities. But as Charles indicated, it doesn't directly address compostable materials in this biomass, so it doesn't prohibit it. It doesn't explicitly allow it. So, you know, I guess I would look at it as some, for those activities, at least as it stands right now, we wouldn't be looking for coverage under this order and asking individuals to submit an NOI. It would just be something that we would currently, would not be covered by a regulatory permit or program that we currently have in place.
Mr. Chairman, I also want to say this is a tremendous step forward. This is our second set of emergency regs. Our first was with the Forest Service. We're still going to need to develop in your private timber industry huge fire burns or mixed ownership, and that still needs to be developed. And this doesn't prohibit it, and perhaps that those provisions could encourage what Board Member Gusti mentioned when they're developed and before us.
I might also, this is actually kind of nice, point out that we might be able to use our categorical waiver to allow that sort of discharge to happen that you're suggesting.
Well, I'm just getting back to your point about trying to reserve capacity in the landfills. And if you have 300 trucks a day, which is not an unusual number based on my experience, with wood chips, you know, they can be used to address water quality concerns on even small parcels and allow people access to fill up their pickups and get their own chips.
Right, I think we would agree. The point I was trying to make is the order you just adopted a little while ago for low threat discharges could be applied in this circumstance.
There you go. Well, Charles, might I then offer that in the spirit of making it up as you go along, that having then the creativity to say somebody came in, say County of Sonoma, for instance, Transportation and Public Works said, hey, we've got all these downed trees and right-of-ways, because that's where a lot of them actually have been downed in the and are sitting on the side of the road. If an application came in to say, hey, we want to chip this and make it available for a small community up here, perhaps and maybe consider just, again, making it up here is that maybe in a programmatic way or use that waiver that we just reauthorized under consent. I think you have the tools you need, and I think you guys continue to have the flexibility probably to do that, given your existing tools you have. And I trust you to do it.
Yeah, I think we can usually make something work if we believe it's protective of water quality.
Yeah, absolutely. Patty, did you have speaker cards? Charles, we're going to take some public comments here. Thanks, Patty. All right, I've cut a couple speaker cards. First is for Brenda Edelman.
Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I basically wanted to praise all the agencies for the work they've done in this incredible event. And I don't want to come off as being critical, but I have one really big question that's been bothering me. I've been involved in a lot of meetings. I've read a lot of the materials. And the issue that's concerned me most is that our households contain enormous amounts of toxic chemicals. Many of them are endocrine-disrupting chemicals. A lot is unknown about what happens when they combine with one another and the effects of fire and with this. And according to what I've read, the ash was generally highly toxic, and that there was some question as to whether it could go to the landfill, and there was a decision made that it was okay to go to the landfill, and I basically want to know why, how, what information helped make that decision and determine that it was okay to do that. And the other thing is that I saw some list in regards to the monitoring for toxics into the waterway. I've been told that it appears as though a good job is being done to prevent runoff. In a way, not having much rain is a big blessing right now. So the one issue is sending the ash to our local landfill. The other issue has to do with that ash that might possibly end up in the creeks and streams, determining what damage it might be doing and dealing with that. So far, the evidence looks pretty good that nothing bad is happening. But one of the things that concerned me was that dioxin was not being tested for. And in one of the federal lists, it appeared as though dioxin is really a constituent of concern. And I'd just like to bring that up. So I'm very hopeful that we won't end up with toxins in the river, but I would like to get more information on that. I just didn't see a whole lot that was helpful that convinced me that it wasn't a problem, but maybe staff can address that. Thank you.
Yeah, Brenda, might I suggest too, item number 11 is coming up, and I think we'll have a more robust discussion about this. I think your questions are very good, and I think it may be really appropriate to take them on in that part of it. Your questions apply to both of these agenda items for sure. But I think to put that question out there, might I continue this question if we don't completely answer it here, that we continue the question into item number 11 and let it stand?
I'm perfectly fine with that. I mean, I don't, in regards to this particular order, I don't have a problem doing that. I just basically want to make sure the issue is dealt with appropriately.
Yes, I appreciate your question very much. Great. Bob Leggy, please.
Uh, Chairman Noren, board members, my name is Bob Legge. I'm with the Russian River Keeper. I don't have a script in front of me, so you're going to have to bear with me for a minute. We were very happy to see on page seven, under conditions for discharge of disaster-related waste at temporary waste staging areas at regulated disposal facilities, number two, must prevent surface runoff, run-on, must prevent erosion and transport of soils, must implement management measures and or best management practices for stormwater conveyance and control. Both, that's language we love to see. However, in conditions for discharge of disaster-related waste at temporary waste storage facilities, not located at regulated waste disposal facilities, or conditions for discharge of disaster-related waste at temporary surface impoundments, not located on regulated facilities, there's no such language. Also, we did not see any mention of inspections by your staff, inspection frequency. We don't see any monitoring requirements, at least photographs, at the very least, of any of these temporary facilities. We're talking about a five-year waiver. I don't know if you noticed this, but in the photo that CNS Waste Solutions had, it's taking concrete and metals, the silt fences and straw wattles were compromised. This is a big deal. We don't have a lot of monitoring information out there. We're currently out there working on these fire areas, and we know what's going into these places, and we know what's going on the ground. And I just hope that you guys are thinking about this, that the board isn't going to address this, so I can take the answers to those questions and just food for thought. Thanks. I'm sorry I didn't get to submit comments to the board, but we've been very busy with the fire, as everyone else has, and I wanted to commend Charles. I did pick up the phone and call him and was able to speak to him, but I'm sorry I didn't get any comments in, but that's it for me. Thanks.
Great. Thank you for your comments, Bob. Any questions for Rob? Great. The last speaker card I have is Mark Soylent.
Good morning, Mark Soylent. I am a local business owner. I own Stony Point Quarry, which you saw one picture of, Soils Plus, and Grab and Grow Soil Products. And I would like to speak on behalf of kind of what's going on with cleanup operations, and also kind of touch on both concrete and green debris issues. First of all, I want to recognize Pete Powell's and Republic Services as well. I understand the pressure that they're in and under dealing with the truck traffic and the issue with track out. It's a concept of not allowing soil to encroach on public right-of-ways. We've had to deal with that issue, and I really want to commend for the way he's managed his site and the truck traffic. He's a model. Also, CNS, by the way, for the record, they're taking quite a bit of the debris right now, and we're taking essentially just the private sector opt-out concrete, and we're all awaiting the next contract to be let by the Army Corps of Engineers. The concrete is fully recyclable, and to answer the question about contamination, we've been assured by the Army Corps of Engineers that the EPA was the first step in cleaning all of these properties, and they've been certified clean. There's no way that Republic or Redwood Landfill would receive those soils or ash debris if they weren't publicly suitable to go in the landfill. So for those in the room wondering, there's a huge hand that the federal government has over California, and my understanding right now in talking with the government contractors is that there's a little bit of arm wrestling going on between the Army Corps and the state of California OES folks. So we just hope that these issues get resolved, because right now
not everyone's operating as professionally as Republic and CNS Waste or ourselves. A lot of the metal and concrete is not being properly recycled. It's going into the landfills because the Army Corps is insisting that the contractors move at a super rapid pace. And so I want the public to understand that it's not the private operators, it's the Army Corps of Engineers kind of forcing this down our throat. And our landfill is precious, and our recyclables are precious. And those two companies and ours are doing everything that we can to fight for what's right. So the concrete and the metal, they're going to be fully recycled and put to absolutely glorious use. I want the public to understand that. The concrete is crushed and primarily made into recycled road base, which has a fairly high demand in construction right now. And so we've done testing. The material's clean. It's sound. Some of the overcharred concrete is a little bit compromised, but in general, it's fine. And I want to applaud the water board for the waiver. And I also need to apologize to the board. It just came to my attention yesterday that I needed a waiver. So at the risk of exposing myself to litigious folks in the room or in the public, we immediately signed it. We were already approved by the county with a waiver, so we did that right away before we started taking concrete last month. But we applaud your efforts. We applaud the locals that we work for and that regulate us, and we're doing everything that we can to be responsible and retain our storm waters, filter them, clean them, and in some cases go zero discharge. So, Mark, any questions?
Can I ask you, I drove by Stony Point Quarry the other day. Man, you have a mountain of concrete out there. There's just no doubt about it. There's mountains of concrete coming out of these sites. I actually just bought 7 yards of mulch from Grab and Grow last week, too.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. No, and I actually, my point is, though, I believe both those sites are covered under a general industrial stormwater permit.
All three of the sites I owned are all WDID approved. And as much challenge as we've had with the new SMARTS system in 24-plus months, everything's being uploaded. There are some glitches, but we are fully registered. We're Cal Recycle certified at the sites to recycle.
As far as I'm aware, you've at both of those facilities have had industrial stormwater permits for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah, since the dawn of time, essentially.
Yeah, and so from that standpoint, what you're saying is then you're covered, even under the inert waste aspect of this, whether it be metal or concrete or even the organics, you're saying that you're either covered under a county waiver or under an NOI under this waiver. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now, let me address the concept of the mountain of concrete. I know even Terry, who's on your staff, drove by and said, oh, gosh, is that safe? Can they handle it? It's actually not as impressive as it seems. We've put safety precautions around the pile, and that pile is fully contained on site. We have very large storm ponding capabilities with that property.
Yeah.
So as onerous as it looks from Stony Point Road driving by, it's not, it's impressive, but it's literally just a drop in the bucket for the cleanup.
Yeah, and
we're only 22 or 23% done with Sonoma County's effort. And, you know, we're helping with the Napa Atlas fire as well from our Soils Plus facility.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the realization here, right? It's just the sheer intensity and scale of this, right? Is that, you know, Stony Point Quarry, and by the way, I meant to say that I didn't mean it as a knock that you had a mountain of concrete. I actually just drove by and it's like, whoa, look at that. That's a big one. I mean, you guys often have a lot of processed aggregate up there too, you know, whether it be rock or whatever you're working on. That has been an active quarry for decades. And it's just the looking at this, whether it be the waiver for the landfill here to accept these materials, whether it be organics or the inerts, the sheer scale of this thing is off the chart for everybody. And I think that the intent here for having these waivers is to handle that in the most effective, efficient, and reasonable way we can. No, it's not tested for everything. In fact, I've tested, in my job, I'm a consultant as a day job, and we've tested a fair amount of ash. It's true that we don't test it for everything, you know, but the metals content really is surprisingly low in most of this ash, to me. You know, we're not exceeding TTLC metals concentrations in barely any of the ash. And it's quite interesting to look at this on, again, on scale. And I think it's important to have these facilities. We're very lucky to have the facility and infrastructure that was in place when this happened to be able to handle this stuff, even under the disaster scenario when it's all coming at you out of a fire hose. We're very lucky. And for that, I'm very thankful we have facilities that we have here in Sonoma County. And I think this waiver, as a result then, is trying then to manage our way through this. And I think we'll get into this more about what's happening and when what some of these responses have been in this agenda item 11. But I think it's just a super important step to get this to going forward, because this is going to go on for a while. I believe that this is going to go on for probably another 5 to 6 months, at least to get through what the inventory is right now, and then start to look back to, you know, how do you go forward from there?
Yeah, we really believe that the heavy push will be something like 5 or 6 months, but there will be properties in Kenwood, Glen Ellen, Fountain Grove that that drag out. You know, there are some properties at Fountain Grove that have 300 tons of concrete on them. So you mentioned the stat of 262 total tons of debris to be scoured from a property. Well, that's the average property, considering the smaller coffee park real estate parcels there. But one thing that we want to proclaim is that our behavior as an industrial operator will not change because there's a waiver in place. We're not, there's nothing that we're going to be doing that's any different other than taking in more debris that we can properly handle. And I assure you the CNS property, our property, they have the capacity. They're built for this. We have the resources here in Sonoma County between the amazing contractors and haulers and business owners and property owners, and including the county. What the county's done with some of their own properties has been remarkable.
Well, and I think to add to that again, I think we have the regulatory infrastructure here. You know, like, for instance, you've been covered under that. You were covered under the old 97 industrial stormwater permit. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you re-upped, and when it got re-upped a couple of years ago, these facilities have been monitored for quite a long time. You've got a lot of monitoring data. A lot of that monitoring data is actually fairly applicable to what's you're taking before this disaster and after. I mean, I think we're very, again, lucky to have all these layers kind of in place. We there's no doubt that the dials got turned up to 12 here on a lot of fronts. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to recognize that this isn't haphazard to the extent that I think it's putting us at great risk. I think that, yes, there is a disaster that's happened, and it's continuing to roll. At the same time, I'm fairly comfortable with what's going on. That's not to say that we don't need to change or amend or watch or verify and inspect. I totally can see that, but I do appreciate what's happening here, including your efforts.
Yeah, you're welcome. I only see two potential disasters, and the fire is an event and a story. The two disasters that really are at play now are how we respond and how we take care of our community and how we rebuild and how we keep our citizens here and how we also protect our environment. And the current issue I see really is sort of a federal government, state government, you know, out-of-towners coming in, kind of maybe forcing their hand a little bit. We need to stand up for our community, protect it, protect our people, and keep working hard and do what's right for the legacy piece. The fire is what happened. What we do about the fire is the real event. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any other questions? Sure.
Well, I forgot to make a quick comment about the organics. Everybody in the room realizes that Sonoma County doesn't really have an organic recycling solution. 2 years ago in October, Sonoma Compost was shut down, and there are two operations left. My Grab and Grow facility is one of them, a very small facility. There's another one on Todd Road. We both have shut down for public dumping on Fridays and Saturdays, effective last week. We don't have the capacity. So it's imperative that the water board works with the county and other operators. Like, I didn't realize the county had given up a piece of the old landfill ground. I think that's fabulous. And come up with programs to support homeowners and the community in dealing with erosion issues and rebuilding. But we have a really serious issue. The two small organic operations, mine being one of them, were full. And we're at our state-mandated capacities. And even though we have waivers to exceed those, our facilities are full. We don't have the space. And the public is already quite upset that we don't have a solution for them. And we're forcing folks to outhaul green matter to surrounding landfills and counties. So I didn't want to let that go unnoticed. You know, if there's 19 million trees that need to ultimately be dealt with, we can't deny that or forget about that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Charles, come on down.
Great. Thanks, David. Charles, I just want to go back to the issue that was raised on page 6, dealing with temporary waste storage areas. I think the points raised merit a couple of minutes here. Reading through section D under conditions, every line from A through F talks about temporary waste piles. What does temporary mean in your mind? What is the definition of that term in terms of length of time that something can be used as a staging area?
Well, I would say it's deliberately not detailed. And we want to be flexible enough because we recognize that this could take a number of years. And the volumes of debris we're talking about are going to take a long time to dispose of and reuse in cases. So we really haven't. So I would say I don't have an idea what a temporary means as a definition. I think we're doing this, as Chairman Noren said, kind of by the seat of our pants, and we want to be flexible enough to deal with this this disaster appropriately.
So that said, on page 8, number 4, a temporary waste pile must obtain coverage under the general permit for stormwater discharge associated with certain activities. Does that cover the concerns that have been brought up before this board about tracking these piles? If a temporary, to use that word, pile is there for months or perhaps even longer, the BMPs laid out here are fine with me, but if there's a temporary site in play for an extended period of time, does that general permit provide the mechanism to do some checking, some monitoring, at least site visits over the life of that temporary site?
Well, this kind of answers Bob Legge's concerns as well about adequate stormwater BMPs. We do have access if the staging is on a landfill, we have a landfill permit, so we have access. We can do whatever monitoring we need to do. If it's on a site that is not a landfill, they have to comply. They have to get a construction stormwater permit or an industrial stormwater permit. They have to prepare a SWIP, a stormwater prevention pollution prevention plan, which is going to protect water quality and will give us access to the site to inspect to see that the BMPs are being maintained and are operating properly. And to answer Bob more, I'll take this opportunity to answer Bob more directly. There is a general requirement for all for any entity covered under this permit in Section B, Number E, that the discharger must prevent the direct or indirect discharge of emergency waste to any surface waters of the state, including ephemeral streams and vernal pools. And as I mentioned, any facility that's not a landfill must obtain coverage under a stormwater permit. And that would require the installation and maintenance of BMPs. So one of the advantages of having any staging area covered under this conditional waiver is that we will be able to track it. So we'll know who's doing it, and we'll be able to follow up appropriately.
Any other questions? Charles, might I suggest or request a few things? I would like to request that you and your staff then use your diligence and your existing authority to inspect these facilities, to look at these facilities, to use the flexibility that's built into this then to review what's happening here, because this is dynamic, it's changing, and we are actually, as Brenda indicated, we're kind of lucky it's not raining right now, even though that's a little bit of a curse maybe, mm-hmm. but you know, use your authority under either your industrial stormwater permitting, under the flexibility of this permit, to go out and look, check, verify. I'd also like to further request then that no later than 6 months later, we come back and talk about this again. Because if this is going to go on for a while, if this needs to be amended, which I don't think it does, but I would just like to be informed and have this board informed in some manner, whether it be in an EO report or whether it be you coming back, Charles, let's talk about what's happening here. If we need to do something or have further direction or amendment to actions within this agency or our partner agencies, because also some of these agencies are governed by the LEA under county, and that partner with them to the extent that you have and you do, and come back and tell us what's going on, and we'll go from there.
Right, right. I don't want to shortchange the county here, because the LEAs do inspect these facilities as
they
well.
Do. Yes, and these facilities tend to be rather well-regulated, I'll say, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word.
Absolutely.
That they are regulated already. The nature of the temporary facility or an expanding temporary footprint, though, and how that goes as this kind of carries, I think is important to recognize. And I recognize the comments from Bob Leggy and others here. So if you could do that, that would be great. It's informal. It's an informal request, but I think it's a reasonable one.
Yeah, I would think it would be very interesting for the board to see how this is all progressing, you know, periodically.
Yeah, I think at some point, too, I would be interested myself to actually go and see some of these facilities. So if there's an opportunity to do so, myself or other board members that show interest, I think it would be a good thing. And take a look at kind of the bigger round picture here.
Okay.
Okay, I don't have any other speaker cards. And seen none. Any other comments or from the board?
Mr. Chair, I move that the board adopt order number R1-2017-0056.
With the
change.
Ms. Petty, could you please call the roll?
Board Member Quinto.
Aye.
Board Member Corbett.
Aye.
Chairman Noren.
Aye.
Board Member Bedoya.
Aye.
Board Member Gant.
Aye.
Board Member
Duke. Aye.
Fantastic. Thank you for everyone. We're going to take a 10-minute break here, and then we'll come back and take items.